All right, welcome back to the .edu podcast. This is Jimmy Howard doing interviews with people around our field who are doing their work in interesting and creative ways and have some really awesome ways to sort of perceive our work. And so today on the show, I have Chelsea Terrell. And
hi.
And she's going to talk to us a little bit about her perception of feminism and talk about how it's impacting her work at Clemson and also how it's impacting her future. And so, so I want to give Chelsea a chance to introduce herself and maybe talk a little bit about, you know, how did you get here? What did you do in the past? And so, yeah.
Sure. So my name is Chelsea. I am originally from Rhode Island. I decided to take the plunge from Rhode Island to New York for college. So I went to Hofstra University on Long Island in New York, where I was a major in print journalism and creative writing. Loved that work. I interned at 17 in Cosmopolitan and was sure that I was going to be a magazine journalist in New York City. I tried that out for a year in New York, and I loved the work that I was doing. I worked at a fashion company called Rent the Runway, but I realized that I was missing something. I wasn't getting fulfilled in the work that I was doing, so I decided to pursue a career in student affairs. I was really involved in my undergrad. I was a resident assistant, orientation leader, president of a couple different clubs, and I knew that that was where my fit was, so I wanted a really different experience. Hofstra did not have a football team, so Clemson
different.
Was completely different. Great people down here, a really strong program, so I came down here and interviewed, and here I am.
Awesome.
Yeah,
I have a friend who worked at Hofstra for a while. Her name is Christina King. Do you know her?
Yeah.
Oh, you know Christina?
She was a hall director when I was a student there, when I was a resident assistant.
Yeah. So we worked at Delaware together. She speaks fondly of the students and her experience at Hofstra.
Yeah.
So that's cool. Cool connection.
Small world.
Yeah, small world. So you know, I got to know you a little bit through talking with Jeff because he's interacted with you a couple times around the idea of feminism and sort of like he was just captivated by some of the things that you had to say.
Yeah.
And so he's like, I think that you'd be a really cool guest on the podcast.
I'm
and
honored.
So I would love to get a sense of for you how you come to understand and also define feminism for yourself.
Sure. So I think there are some people who identify super strongly with being a feminist. Mm-hmm. I would say that I believe in feminism, but I'm not necessarily one of those gung-ho feminists. Mm-hmm. For me, feminism is more about women supporting other women, and that is the lens that I really come from. I think that the only way that we can grow and advance in this world is if we support one another.
Okay.
So that is sort of the lens that I take on feminism.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember when we were talking over the phone, like, I really appreciated just, again, a different perspective.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I always talk about my identity, right? Like, I'm a QPOC, so gay, like, cisgendered man, existing in this world. And so, like, I understand feminism in a way that I can, like, be an ally, but also, like, fight for equality, right?
Right.
And so, for me, it was interesting to talk to you to sort of get another perspective on feminism, right? That it's about how even women support each other in that sort of like in the world and through the workplace and all those different perspectives.
Absolutely.
So,
yeah.
So we had talked a little bit about, and I want you to elaborate on, you know, when you think about the way you view feminism, how did that develop for you? Like, I think we had talked about that. So maybe you want to.
Yeah. So I think that really came about through my experiences working in female dominated industries. So I realized when I got to Clemson and when I was having conversations with my peers that there was this sense of women being almost intimidated by men or feeling like they didn't necessarily have a voice when they were up against men. And I felt like I didn't have that fear. And that was very much because I was cultivated in industries where women were on top and it didn't matter if a man was going to get in their way. You were going to make it happen no matter what it took. So between working in the magazine industry and working in the fashion industry, I was in industries where women supported other women and where men didn't stand in our way. So when I got here and I started having conversations with other women, I realized that that wasn't the case for everybody. And because I had those experiences and because that was what I was brought up to believe and, you know, through my experiences, I knew that I sort of needed to articulate that vision for feminism with other women to say, we can do this, we can come together and, you know, we can be strong and we can support one another.
Yeah. So thinking about the idea of both being, like, to a certain extent competitive, right? Like, you still want to do a good job, right? And you still want to, you know, make sure that you are the best so that you can move forward. How do you balance that in your day-to-day work with also trying to support your peers in a way that, like, is both get you to a place where you need to be, right? And I'm also thinking about that in a very capitalist way.
Yeah.
But like, no. But also like in a way that like supports your fellow folk, right?
Sure, yeah. And that's a really, it's an interesting question, and I think it's something that's really challenging, but I think the solution to that and where the balance falls is in supporting one another in the areas of strengths that we have. So we all don't share the same strengths, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I may be really great at, you know, communication, written and verbal communication. I was a journalism major, mm-hmm. but, you know, another one of my peers may be a better relationship builder than I am, or maybe they're better at managing conflict. So how can we plug women into where their strengths are, where, you know, we fit? It's not necessarily about competing, because we all bring something unique to the table. So it's sort of a matter of having those conversations, figuring out where women's areas of strengths are, and then helping them find opportunities where they can excel at those strengths. We're good at different things, and we can find different opportunities for one another. It's just a matter of having those conversations and really being intentional about, you know, where we end up in the future. Mm.
So I know that you said, like, this is a conversation that it's been evolving since mm-hmm. you've been at Clemson, right? I'm curious to see how do you go about building those relationships so that, like, that conversation feels warm, right? It feels welcomed, and it feels, to me, I understand your support as, like, genuine. I actually care about where you're going. How can I support you? How do you build the relationship so that that conversation, especially in student affairs, where, like, people are, like, grasping for, opportunities, right? Because 2 years in your grad program, you want to get as many experiences mm-hmm. as you can, right? Because, I mean, unfortunately, we work in a place where, like, we are valued by the type of things that we do.
Right.
Not that I agree with that. But in your first 2 years of master's, I mean, you had work experience before this, but like I remember myself coming in, I was just like, I've got to get every single thing I can.
Yeah.
And I think I also I agree with you in the fact that we all supported each other. I don't know if we just support each other to that level, right? Where mm-hmm. it was just like, oh yeah, like go rah-rah Jimmy or rah-rah whoever, but it was still like I still really want that opportunity, right?
Yeah.
And so how do you build the relationship so that you can have both things, if you will? Or maybe there's a compromise. I don't
know. So I think first it starts with the fact that you need to not approach it from a feminist lens, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm not having these conversations because I want to compete against you or because I want to find an opportunity for you. But rather, it's coming from a friendship place, you know? Mm-hmm. Being in a master's program, I'm in a cohort model, so that almost brings me benefit. I'm in a cohort model. I'm trying to find friends. I'm trying to make friends. So those conversations almost happen naturally, you know? Mm. Who are you? What do you love? What are you passionate about? What makes your day? What makes you happy? Those things just sort of come up in conversation, and then eventually you're able to place those things over time. So really it's come from, you know, those conversations, developing friendships, but also just being in the classroom with those people. You know, they voice their opinions about what they're passionate about or what they believe or what their values are. So you start to pick up on those things. So you almost don't have to come at it at this lens of, you know, where am I going to put you? What box am I going to put you in? Or, you know, it happens naturally. And I think that's where relationship building comes into play, and where you need to start to have this approach of, okay, I'm not fighting with these other women. I'm not competing with them. I want to know them. I want to get to know them. How can we have those conversations and then deal with the rest later?
Wow. Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
Yeah.
Again, noted for the future, right? So when I think about the cohort model, right, I also think that there are men who sometimes are allies in this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you, even if you do or do not, do you think that men have a role or a way that they can help engage in this conversation with you?
I do. So it's interesting because I think to a certain degree that, you know, higher education for the most part is a female-dominated field to start anyway.
Right.
So a lot of times in the cohort model, men are outnumbered by women. And I think that they definitely can be allies by, you know, first not being the ones who always are the first to speak up in class. I think it's, you know, common that men are the first ones to raise their hand or make a comment or, you know, let their opinion be known. But I have found very much in my cohort model that there are men who sort of let people speak and they're not taking all of the airspace. And that is one way to really be an ally, to allow those conversations to happen and to allow those women to voice their opinions and their thoughts. So that's one way. And another is really just, you know, teamwork. You know, I think that I have found that my cohort mates and the males in my cohort by no means feel that they are above women. And I think that that is something that a lot of women struggle with, or that they are afraid is going to happen with working with different men. But for the most part, we've been on even playing field. And I think that is a really big piece of allyship as well, sharing that space with women and, you know, letting them take on leadership roles, and not as a man feeling like, oh, no, I need to take ownership of this and I need to do this and be the leader of it.
Right. So I love the idea that, especially in this program, and I think in our field, right? Like, I think we make room for lots of folk, right?
Yeah.
And I also think we are very conscious, at least I've experienced this, as conscious about the space we take up.
Yeah.
Sometimes I do think men can take up more space
right.
than I think they need
mm-hmm.
or that we need. But I do like the idea that as we are doing this work together, that we sort of imagine ourselves as equal, right?
Like, yeah.
And I think, one, I that's something that I believe. It sounds like clearly something you believe.
Yeah.
But, like, I do think that, especially when I move, I'm curious about for your future, right? Like, when I move, when you move out of this experience mm-hmm. and you move into your first full-time student affairs professional
right.
job, there is hierarchy, right? And there
yeah.
is patriarchy, right? And there mm-hmm. are men in, like, yes, student affairs is a very female-dominated position, but I would say that our leadership in most institutions
yeah.
is male, right?
It absolutely.
And
is.
So
yeah.
I think we embody a lot of the, like, masculine tendencies mm-hmm. around, not that, you know, women can't be masculine, but around competition,
right.
around product, around producing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I've seen in my experience as an ally, especially watching, you know, my female friends and folks who identify as women move through the world in a way that they don't feel like their ways of knowing are respected, right?
Right?
Or their ways of being are respected.
Right.
So I think that the women that I have had, you know, friendships with have not... I don't, like, struggle is not the right word, because I think it's sort of like myself as a person of color, like, you just sort of adapt, right,
right,
to the whatever is around you. But I don't know if it's ideal, right, because I don't know if there's a lot of, if there's a lot of rooms of women's ways of knowing
right.
when it comes to leadership.
Yeah.
And so I'm curious to know, for you, when you think about yourself working in a patriarchy, right, where,
mm-hmm.
like, most of our presidents are men, and,
yeah.
you know, most of the folks who lead our student affairs divisions are
men.
And so, yeah, like, we will work in, like, these dominated fields, but
yeah.
a lot of the women that I've experienced have mm-hmm. been in, like, mid-manager, director-level
right.
roles. And like I said, sometimes student affairs VPs,
mm-hmm.
very rarely have I seen women as presidents, right?
Right.
I mean, that happens. But
right.
I'm curious for you, when you think about working in that environment, right, what are some things that you are hoping to bring to that
mm-hmm.
kind of environment, or that you hope that you... that you get when you move on to your next career?
Yeah, so I think the big thing for me is culture, and that's something that I really look for in an office, a department, or an institution. I want to know that I can walk into a space, into an office, and that I'm valued, and that I can articulate my needs or what I want or what my goals are. I think there are certainly instances where there are women working in offices or departments and the patriarchy prevents them from articulating what their goals mm-hmm. are or where they want to be. So something that I would absolutely look for is that culture. Are you going to help me get to my goals? Are you going to help me be what I want to be? And, you know, there's a sense of friendliness there. You know, are you warm? Are you welcoming?
Mm-hmm.
Do you care about my professional development? So those are some questions that I would ask to kind of, you know, figure out what that culture is and how I'm going to be able to advance. In terms of my role in the workplace and how I can support other people, there's this concept of imposter syndrome, and I don't know if you've heard about
mm-hmm.
that, but I think it's something that women really struggle with, where they don't believe that, you know, they can do something or somebody can do it better for me. And we were chatting about that even before
yeah.
I got here. I was like, I'm having this imposter syndrome moment. Should I be here talking about women supporting other women? I don't know. And so we really second guess ourselves and our abilities and what we're great at. And so for me in my role, I want women to step out of that imposter syndrome role, and I want for them to believe, you're awesome. You do this work and you're smart and you're innovative and you're creative and you're personable. Like, you belong here and you can make your dreams happen and you can make your goals happen, and don't let anybody stand in your way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think because of my background and, you know, how I was brought up and working in the industries that I've worked in, that I am sort of able to push women to believe that of themselves, because
mm-hmm.
there were people who carved that path out for me.
Yeah.
So it's sort of my way of paying it forward for them in that way.
I love the idea of role modeling, right? The idea that, like, there are people who helped you understand
yeah.
that anything was possible, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not that you didn't believe that, but really showed you a path.
Right.
And I also love the idea of almost like freeing yourself, giving yourself the flexibility and the freedom to think, right?
Right.
Like, and not be so bound by the patriarchy that, like, it really exists to sort of be like, double check yourself.
Yeah.
You know, like, quote unquote, like, know your role. Right. But, like, that's hard to get through, right?
Yeah.
And so I love the fact that at this point in your career, right, like, this has been your experience. This has been, you know, what you've, you know, what you care about. And so to even, like, agree to come on this podcast mm-hmm. to me shows that, like, this is something that, like, you really are ready to impact, right?
Yeah.
And I'm really excited because, you know, after spending time supervising, like, I'm really excited to see, like, what you'll bring to the table, right, in your future work, mm-hmm. either through conferences or through your workplace, of, like, how you will role model and shape the future generation of, you know, I don't know if you're going to work at a place that has graduate students or whatever,
yeah.
but or professional staff, but, like, how you will shape that culture
yeah.
and shape people to sort of, again, start to believe in that freedom of thought and really moving forward. And, again, and it's not that it doesn't exist. It's just to help
right.
to have someone help role model and push. Is,
yeah.
It's really cool.
Yeah. No burden there at all, right? though, right?
No burden. But, you know, like, you know, it's like in my community, right? Like, I feel like it's important for me to role model and to take folks under the wing
yeah.
to sort of say, like, here is the structure that we are working in,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, for folks of color, you know, like, for men of color, like, it's like,
yeah.
this is what we got, but here are the ways that we can get around that. Here are the structures that I found that work for me.
Right.
Here are the ways that I found validation through this
mm-hmm.
work. And so, yeah, I don't think people have to take on the burden.
Right.
But I think it feels like you're ready to do
yeah.
so.
Yeah. I mean, like I was saying, you know, it's my way of paying it forward.
Mm.
I think that I am really lucky to have had the experiences that I've had and the industries that I've had. And so I have so many times seen women who are so incredibly talented and they have the ability to make such an impact on the people that they work with. And they're either afraid to take those steps or they feel like there are too many obstacles in their way. And so I think for me, I am somebody who's very compassionate and I'm emotional and I'm super sensitive. And so I'm a woman, right?
Mm.
The stereotype. But anyway, I want to change that lens for those women. And so it's something that is sort of scary knowing that you have, you know, the ability or, you know, responsibility to help women take those steps. But I'm excited about it. And you're right. Like, I'm eager. And
yeah.
Yeah.
You're super eager.
Yeah.
And I've heard lots of different folks talk about, you know, female empowerment. But sometimes that message to me, as I read it, comes off as like, be more like men.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Like, or like shoulder pad feminism.
Yeah.
Where it's like, get in there and mm-hmm. like, get it done.
Yeah.
And so nothing wrong with that.
No.
But like, I do love the fact that you're saying, like, let's embrace all the things that make us.
Yeah.
You know, and really bring that to the workplace. So that's
right.
really, to me, that's really motivating and inspiring. So
I appreciate that.
Yeah,
thank
so
you.
Thank you. So thinking about transitioning yourself from the graduate experience into the full-time professional work, I'm curious for you, what are the things that we've talked about, the things that you're looking for in your next position,
mm-hmm.
but what are the things that you're looking out for as you're entering the job search, specifically about the support that you're looking for and what are your next steps?
Yeah, so I think being in a cohort model, it's really tricky because you start to compare yourselves amongst your peers. Who's getting a job first? What jobs are they getting? Where are they getting their jobs? So for me, I think it's, you know, support across the board for my own process. That's definitely something that I'm looking for. But one thing in particular that I'm struggling with, especially as we're talking about feminism, is that in my job search, I am looking to be with my partner
okay.
who is in Texas. And that's been a real struggle for me because I am a female and I've worked really hard for my career. So, you know, all the opportunities that I've engaged in and, you know, things that I've taken advantage of, would ideally set me up for an awesome career anywhere in this world. You know, there are people who want to hire me and, you know, have me in their office. But I have this really hard conflict of, do I go out and seek the job because I am a female and I'm strong and I'm smart and there are people who want me for this position? Do I go out and take that? Or am I going to appear as weak if I decide to go where my partner is? And I think it's hard because I do consider myself a role model, and that's something that we talked about. And I want to be this strong female who breaks barriers and, you know, has an awesome career. So what precedent am I setting if I go where my partner is? So for me, I think that has really become a question of my values. What do I value? And is it okay that I value my relationship and, you know, my future with my personal life over my career? For me, I think those two align. You know, I want a great career doing the work that I love, but I also want to be with the person that I love. Right. So striking that balance is really hard for me. So I think in this process, one thing that I'm looking for is just understanding and recognizing that our processes are our own. And someone told me through this job search process that you don't have to justify your search to anybody. You don't need to answer people's questions. It is what you want it to be.
Right.
And I think that has been a great piece of advice and one that I've tried to live by. You know, I can still be a role model and, you know, go and be where my partner is. But I don't have to not make that choice for the sake of other women, if that makes sense.
It absolutely makes sense. Like, I think about the pressure that you sort of face, right? Mm-hmm. It's kind of terrible, right? That you feel that you, like, that choice makes you less of a feminist,
right,
or less of a person who cares about women's issues, or it does question your, like, that's terrible that it makes you feel conflicted in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so it totally makes sense that, you know, you're, as a person who's advocating for these things, feel like, can I have both things?
Yeah. And it's interesting you say that because there was another piece of advice that I've heard. We always, as women, hear this thing, can we have it all? You know, can we have the kids and the husband and the career and, you know, a social life and friends and et cetera, et cetera? But it's sort of unfair to think, you know, that women have to ask themselves the question of can I have it all? Because men have had it all forever.
Yeah, we like, and there's like, it's like, oh, he wants to have his cake and eat it too.
Yeah,
like everyone wants to have their cake and eat
it
too. Like,
yeah, duh. Exactly. So, you know, that's a big struggle for me. Like, why do I have to pick? Like, does it have to be having it all? Men have had it all forever, for centuries.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that's a hard balance for me. I want to have all of those things, and it's going to be really hard, but there are pressures from society that, you know, and make you think that you can't do it all, because if you're super invested in your career, then you're not going to be invested in your kids or your husband. And if you're super invested in your family and kids, then maybe you're not going to get opportunities at work. And that's a really hard stigma to face, and one that's sort of daunting in my future. So, yeah, it's just tricky.
Yeah. So how are you making meaning of that? So, like, I hear the sort of like, I'm making this choice.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like you've made the decision to search
near
your partner, right? And so how did you come to that decision, and how did you make meaning of it, of like, all right, here are my values.
Mm-hmm.
This is how I've made meaning of this, if you feel comfortable sharing.
Yeah, sure. So I think for me, again, that goes back to the culture of the workplace. I told myself that, you know, me following my partner and the choice to do that was important to me. Love is a value that I have, and I realize that probably sounds super corny.
No, it's one of mine too. It's one of mine, you know?
Yeah, you know, my parents are divorced, and so for me, that has always been at the top of my list. You know, I want to have a really strong and successful relationship, and it's not something that I am willing to give up to have a career. And I, you know, I want both, and that's not to say that I don't want a career or I want love. I would love to have both. But for me, I think I made sense of it by just asking myself, what do you value? You know, I realized that, you know, I could have a really amazing career, but if I don't have anybody to come home to at the end of the day to talk to you about that career, how valuable is that to me? And so asking myself that difficult question, is sort of what put me in this position. And, you know, I also believe that everything happens for a reason. So, you know, I've applied to jobs where my partner is, but I've also applied for jobs that are not where he is. And I'm going to find a great fit for me. And, you know, if I was not meant to end up with my partner and there's another career opportunity elsewhere, then that was what was meant to happen. And
right.
It's going to make our relationship stronger. We've been doing distance for a year. So I think that if we can tackle that, then maybe we can tackle anything. But
I agree.
Yeah.
Long distance is, people are like, oh, like, it's probably hard. No, I think long distance makes you, I feel like I talked more to my partner in a way that, like, was more intimate than other places in my life. And so, yeah, no, I think that you're right on the right track that, like, if you can do long distance.
Yeah. And I don't want to communicate this idea that, you know, I want a relationship over my career at all. That's not what I'm articulating.
Yeah.
I want both. And that, again, it goes back to our conversation of, you know, the ability to have it all. But I don't really believe that it's one or the other. I think, you know, one of the beautiful things about working in higher education is that there are jobs everywhere, and there are great jobs everywhere, and institutions everywhere. So knowing that, and that I just needed to be more patient in that process, has sort of given me a little bit of relief and comfort in that process.
It's great to hear that reflection. And it's also great for me because, you know, my framework is like student affairs in general, right? It's just like, a pressure cooker sometimes, yeah. right? It's like, I got to get to this. I got to do this. I got to do this. And mm-hmm. and some of the values don't necessarily like add up, right? Yeah. To like a healthy life mm-hmm. in general, like,
right?
Or a healthy relationship, or sometimes like for you, like a healthy, like I want to focus next on my family and yeah. my career at the same time.
Right.
Sometimes student affairs gets muddy. And so it's nice for people to walk into the field
yeah.
already being established of mm-hmm. like, these are my values. This is my perspective. This is how I'm going to enact those. And this is what I need from a workplace in right. order to get those things.
Yeah.
And to claim and own, like it's, I'm like, this is great.
Yeah.
it's really refreshing for me to hear. And like I said, as a person who finds themselves to be an ally, mm-hmm. like, I'm always sort of like, do you want me to be in the middle? Mm-hmm. Do you want me to be in the background? Do you want me to, like, wave in the back? Like,
right.
whatever. And so this is really cool to hear for me to get a different perspective on, you know, how you hope to move in the world. Again, not that I know you, but, like,
right.
but other people in my life who also are dealing with similar things, it's
yeah.
really helpful to hear. Your reflections in
yeah.
that. So that's really awesome.
Well, I appreciate that you're taking something from this conversation, because I think that that makes you a stronger ally, even just hearing that and processing it and asking yourself, how can I do this better? How can I serve as that ally for somebody?
Yeah, and I hope other people are doing that too as you're listening.
yeah, please do.
Hope you're taking notes, right? Yeah, no. But yeah, I want to thank you for coming on today.
Yeah, absolutely.
And sharing with us some of your perspectives, which I think can only help us do better in our work with everyone.
Yeah.
But specifically as, you know, as you're talking, you know, talking specifically to how we support or how women can support each other and
yeah.
how I can and other men can hopefully support you all in your journeys as well. Okay. So now is we're going to transition to my favorite way to end the podcast, which is to ask you.
Yeah.
What are you loving this week?
Sure. So the month of February was crazy for me.
Okay.
I worked every weekend in February.
Every single weekend?
Yeah. It was crazy work-wise in February.
I saw you one of those weekends.
Yeah. See, you're proof right there. Okay.
yeah.
It was a crazy month. So I think for me, it's only Monday, so I've only got Sunday. But yesterday was the first day in probably a month that I just got to sit on my couch and watch Netflix all day.
What are you watching on Netflix?
So I was watching The Vampire Diaries.
Yes, yes. Sorry, I love
that. My roommate's gonna love that because she has tried to get me addicted to The Vampire Diaries, and she's been successful.
What
now.
Season are you in?
I am just on season one.
Oh, that's
I
the
know.
Like that's you have nowhere. Okay, so
yeah.
stick with it.
Okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I know it seems like I'm watching a teenage.
Yeah.
Like it's like a Buffy the Vampire Slayer
right.
for like this generation.
Right.
But if you can stick with it.
Yeah.
Through the first season. Because right now it's like everyone's sort of like figuring themselves
yeah,
out.
They
you know,
have a
there's
lot
like.
Of feelings.
There's a lot of feelings.
Yep.
There's a lot of like, what's going on? Who
yeah.
am I?
Yeah.
My favorite character is Bonnie.
Oh,
and I know right
she's
now.
Awesome.
Right now, Bonnie's like. I don't know where you
she's
are in the first
tortured.
Season, but she's a
yeah.
little. Yeah. But
mm-hmm.
Bonnie, and I also love Caroline.
Okay.
And so Caroline.
I don't love her yet.
Right. She gets better.
Okay, good.
That so, like, right now she's kind of like, she's a stereotype,
yeah.
right? And she's like a archetyped of, like, a blonde female
right.
friend, right? She's, like,
yeah.
kind of, like, bubbly, active
mm-hmm,
cheerleader.
Mm-hmm.
She gets great.
Okay.
She becomes really awesome.
Good.
So I won't tell you the,
yeah, don't,
the details.
No spoilers.
But yeah, anyways, I also love that. Sure.
Okay.
Sorry, I get really
no,
I get really passionate.
That's good. I'm glad I'm in for a treat then.
You are.
Yeah.
Well, after season 5,
okay.
The guy I'm in whatever season it is now, and it's not very good.
Okay. That's unfortunate.
But
I'll stop
I'm like,
after season 5.
Yeah, cuz right now I'm just like I'm just waiting it out. Like it's just
yeah.
like I know it's going to end.
Yeah.
And they've been moved to like Fridays.
Okay.
At, like not. Like
it's a random
it's
time.
Like it's like the dead spot. It's like
yeah, you'd rather
but,
be at a happy hour or something.
Yeah, you don't know this yet, but
okay.
you probably have heard. But there's a spinoff of that show called The Originals.
Oh,
and that is where it's at.
Okay,
so there's
okay.
something to look forward to if you
Good.
Get into the series.
Thank you for the recommendation.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Yeah.
I'm just about The Vampire Diaries. Anything else you're loving this week?
Oh, I don't. It's only Monday, so I am loving my coffee this morning. That's
Ooh.
The other thing.
Yep.
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 That's it.
All right. So what am I loving this week?
Talking to me.
Oh, yes. Talking to you. And also, I've started I picked up this book. I think it's called Between Me and the World by Ta-Nehisi Coates.
Okay.
I can never say his name right.
That's okay.
I don't want to get his name wrong on the air.
Okay.
But I have it right here. Yes. Ta-Nehisi Coates.
Coates. There you go.
And the book, it's a very, like, short book.
Okay.
But the book is... like magnificent. It's really, really well written. And it's, I don't know if you've heard about the book, but it's a book about this African-American man writing to his African-American son, who's like 15, about the world and about the issues of like systemic racism, mass incarceration, the killings that have happened, you know, of innocent African-American men and women. But he's really talking to them in a way that like is really like empowering, but also like it's very sad, but it's also very moving because of the way that he writes the story. And so I'm not all the way finished yet, but I am loving it. Like, it is a rather sad loving it moment.
Okay.
But it's something that like I'm really excited to finish, and hopefully by the next time this comes around, it can be something that I'm reflecting on.
There you go.
As opposed to just being like, I'm starting to read this thing that's kind of cool and interesting. And also, I also found it interesting is because I'm from Maryland, and so I grew up in the suburbs, but he grew up in like the inner city Baltimore, like where it was like super dangerous.
Okay.
And so reading like, one, knowing that like growing up, I was really afraid of Baltimore. Mm-hmm. Like I was very lucky and had privilege to not have to go into the city, right? And so, but to read his account of the city and the ways he had to protect his body, and really just, I don't know, it's just been really impactful to read that. And I know it's like, it's not a new book, like, but it is nice to get that reflection. And so I recommend that book to anybody who wants to read it. Again, it's Ta-Nehisi Coates, and it's Between Me and the World. And so if you're interested, pick it up. I would love to book club that with somebody. So.
Yeah, I'll add it to my list.
Please. We'll it's super good. Super, super good. Well, Chelsea, it was super great having you on the show today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, and hopefully maybe we can do this again sometime.
I would love that.
Yeah, so, and I know you're going to TBE.
I am.
2 days from now?
Wednesday, yes, yeah. 2 days.
So good luck.
Thank you.
Safe travels,
thank
and I hope
you.
That you find the perfect fit.
Me too.
All right.
Thanks so much.
Well, until next time, this is the .edu podcast. We'll see you next week.